Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in today's show, Matteo Bonetti will be here to reflect on a nightmare day for Juventus, where you could say they dropped 6 points. We'll also be hearing from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well, ahead of Manchester United's Carabao Cup clash. We're in the studio today. Craig Burley is with me, as is Stevie Nicol at home. We will start in the Carabao Cup. Manchester City through to the semi-final after beating Arsenal by 4-1. Did we learn anything from this, Craig, that we didn't know already?
Well, I was going to say, we learned that they're still struggling.
Well, yes.
That Arteta is on the hot seat. 4-1's bad enough at home, albeit against, you know, one of the two best sides in England. But after Jesus scored so early, you know, I'm thinking, this could be 7 or 8 here, and that's the last. I mean, it's bad enough taking a defeat home with you, but
Someone would say, oh, their heads didn't drop after conceding the early goal. They did get themselves back into
it. I'm sure there are some people out there who will try and pitch it as the players are really fighting for Arteta here, and it was a new goalkeeper, and he made mistakes. And
offside goal.
We got this, there was no VAR, and the Phil Foden goal was offside, so it would really only have been 3-1 if you look at the stats. No, I look... He made changes, that was his choice. I know Stevie's got some thoughts on that. But in some ways, the way Arsenal are playing with this team have put even more pressure on Chelsea at the weekend. Because Chelsea must be looking at it thinking, how the hell can we not go to the Emirates, no matter what team he puts out, and beat them?
Yeah.
And that's what they need to do. So in some sense, they've been so bad, the pressure's all on Chelsea for the weekend.
A number of changes. Aubameyang, of course, a forced change. He's out injured. You take a look at it, Stevie. Was this the right thing to do, to rotate others?
Do you know, I think when you're in the middle of the kind of run that they are, where they desperately... Not just for certain individuals, but for everybody at the club. They're desperate for a victory. I think you've got to play your best team. And forget this rotation, because, listen, if your best team isn't that great and you're going to rotate and put players in who are not as good as them, then guess what's going to happen? And you pretty much saw that tonight. Yes, they went in at half-time, this Arsenal side, at 1 each. How, I don't know, because it was men against boys. And then, of course, you don't play your first-choice goalie, you play the reserve goalkeeper, and he absolutely kills you, comes back to haunt you, throws it in. And then normal teams, and particularly a team that's rotated, who are trying to force their way into a struggling 11 as it is, usually that's the kick up the backside in a cup competition to try and get back in the game, try and put some pressure on the opposition. Now, this Arsenal team, like the other Arsenal team, the first Arsenal team, just caved in. So... listen, I would have played the first team. Would it have made any difference? Probably not. But when you need a victory, you play the best players and the best team you can, in my opinion.
What gave them a springboard to confidence last year? FA Cup.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, his cup record's great.
So it gave them Stevie was saying it gave them a platform to work on things, to gain confidence. And when we were playing... and everything's all about rotation now. And I know the circumstances of the pandemic and the shortness. I get all that. But they need to put a run together. They need confidence. And we were a great believers in our era that if you're having a bad run in the league, you got in the cup competition, you played your strongest team, and then that's where you gained your confidence and your momentum from. And the other side of the coin is as well, if you're going to rotate, you've got to make sure you've got damn good players to come in. And you think about it, and I'm not blaming the goalkeeper here, but they sold a guy to Aston Villa, Martinez, who was superb for them and would have been, I say, a great backup for Leno. He was good enough to be keeping Leno out the side when Leno was injured. I mean, many people thought he should have been the number one the way he played, but at least he had that competition there and he was bringing in a guy like that. Whereas now he's bringing in people that are incapable of probably getting in the first team, playing against Manchester City, who fielded a relatively strong side, and the result was, end result was an embarrassment.
Stevie, it's huge now. These next 3 matches, I reckon, you could say, for Arteta. Chelsea, obviously, at the Emirates, and then Brighton and West Brom. What does he need to do from those 3 matches?
Oh, Dan, I'm sorry, Dan, that just sounds so wrong. And it's hard to argue that if he gets defeated badly in these three games, that he won't be out of a job. But I just think it's that wouldn't be the right thing to do. I just think that the players he has aren't good enough regardless of who's in charge of them. And I think it would be the wrong thing to do. The problem is, if you're Arsenal, do you just say, well, we'll just go along and get beat every week? Will we just do nothing? Will we just sit in our hands and pray and hope that something's going to change? Because generally when a team is as bad as this team is, the change usually kicks something in, gets them a few points. And that's bad news for Arteta. But honestly,
Dan,
it sounds
wrong. What have you seen
from
Arteta which would suggest he could get them out of this slump?
He's won the FA Cup, Dan. He got a team, he got pretty much the same team to dig in and get some and win some games.
But that was not just in the FA Cup. Was an age ago now, it feels like. This is a team now sat 15.
It certainly seems an age ago, but surely you have to give them a little bit more time to try and bring that back at the very least. It just feels wrong, Dan. It feels wrong.
Does it feel wrong?
It's a dog-eat-dog business, isn't it? It's a multi-billion-dollar business these days, whether we like it or not. So I said to you upstairs, and I wouldn't be surprised, Brendan Rodgers' name, and he was linked with the Arsenal job before Arteta got it, when he had just left Celtic and Leicester fans were apoplectic about the fact that Arsenal were sniffing around, and I think they were. I asked myself a question, and Rodgers is not everybody's cup of tea, but I actually think he's a very good manager.
Right,
and what he does. And he's working with a squad he's working within a budget at Leicester, and they've got injuries, and he's still churning out results, and they play well and they perform well, and they've been good in the transfer market. And I look at Rodgers as a manager with his experience from where he's been at Swansea and others, and Liverpool and Celtic and Leicester, and I look at that squad and I agree with Stevie that it's not the best squad, but would the Brendan Rodgers, with his experience and his type of football, get more out of that Arsenal side, and would they be looking further ahead down the road with a more positive mindset than where they are now? And I think the answer is yes.
I do think
the answer is yes. And that's the problem there, that there are better managers out there that are capable of getting this bunch of players playing better. He's got the nous, he's got the experience, and that kind of job is not too big for him because he's been at big clubs. A heavy defeat at the weekend or a defeat against Chelsea, picking up no wins in the next two or three games,
yeah,
I think could see him out the door. It's too big a club to sit back and say, oh, everything will be okay, Arteta will come good and he'll get it right. It's too big a business these days.
Stevie?
It just sounds wrong.
Fool. Why is it wrong for Arteta, but not others that have come in and gone?
First of all, I don't disagree with one word Craig said. I don't. But the one thing I've got, and I keep saying it, is whilst you've got this bunch of players, and yes, Leicester are doing well, but I mean, you know, Aubameyang's having a shocker, so Arsenal are having a shocker. If Vardy was injured, you took Vardy out of that team, it could change quite a lot. But
he's gone soft.
How much
the hell's wrong with you, Nicol?
It just feels wrong.
Oh, it's in a festive mood.
It's just sentimental.
It's a festive old mood.
I tell you what, if he's coming to my house for Christmas dinner, that feels wrong. He's going to drink me out of house and home. He's not. I know what he's saying. I know what Stevie's saying. But
what everyone is shouting right now.
Why are you talking about Solskjaer?
Exactly.
Why are you all
calling for Solskjaer's head, who is currently third in the table? Arteta's 15th, yet you're getting all sentimental.
I'm not sentimental.
I'll tell you why, because Manchester United have got some good players. And guess what? Arsenal don't.
But Arsenal have got players that could win the FA Cup.
How many Arsenal players? Right, here's one for you then, Clever Clogs. Mm. How many Arsenal players get in the Man United team? There you go. Silence. What is your answer?
I don't think it's as simple as that, is it, Stevie? Because
because it doesn't suit you.
No, because so is Arteta getting the best out of this squad?
There's no Arsenal player No, you're the one that brought up Ole Gunnar and
right.
Man United.
Yes.
If there's no Arsenal players getting Man United's first team, then do I need to add any more?
So you're saying that no matter who is in charge of this team, 15th is fine because the players are so bad?
I never said it was fine either. I just said it feels wrong that you're going to get rid of a guy so quickly when he's come in with a squad of players that weren't good enough to start with, and he got a tune out of them to begin with, and it's not happening now. And then you're just going to get rid of him for some other guy, regardless of how good Brendan Rodgers may or may not be. The outcome, in my opinion, seems as though without a huge overhaul of players, the outcome's going to be the same as what's happening now. Because they don't possess the fight, the guile, the ability, you name it. Right now, this team doesn't have it with these players.
Right, here's the deal. Couple of games and then he's gone, right, for me. Couple of games and he's gone for me, and then got to go for somebody else.
Elsewhere, Brentford through to the semi-finals of the Cup after beating Newcastle. Stevie, watch this, but we've got no time to discuss it after that now.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Brentford's a decent team.
Action on Wednesday, Stoke taking on Spurs, Everton against United. More on that in a moment.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
What a turn up in Turin on Tuesday. Juventus losing their first domestic game of the season. They didn't lose it. They were thrashed by 3-0 by Fiorentina. And it would top off a terrible day for the defending champions. Remember earlier on in the season, they were handed a win against Napoli because Napoli didn't travel because of Corona. Well, Napoli appealed and they won that appeal. So Juve, in theory, lost 6 points today, if you like. Fourth in the table, they are 7 points off Milan, who are in action against Lazio on Wednesday. Matteo Bonetti is with us. Matteo, we'll talk about that appeal a little later on, but let's focus on the game. What went wrong today?
Well, what went wrong is Juventus went down to 10 men early on in the first half with Juan Cuadrado's horror tackle, the studs nearly breaking the leg of Gaetano Castrovilli, the Fiorentina midfielder, and it was just confusion after that. The defense was absolutely shocking. The partnership between Matthijs de Ligt and Leo Bonucci especially, who you could say was at fault for all of the goals. It was one of the worst displays that we have seen from Juventus. And just to set the picture of how crazy this result was, the last time Fiorentina beat Juventus away in Turin was 2008. That was back when Cesare Prandelli was in his first in as manager of Fiorentina. This is Cesare Prandelli's first win with Fiorentina and Juventus's first loss. It's finally come after really a season of uncertainty and inconsistency and Andrea Pirlo basically having to learn on the job. But today, there just wasn't the response. Defensively, it was about as bad as I can remember from Juventus. Normally, the spine of Juve is their strength, right? It has been at least for the last 9 seasons that they've won the Scudetto. But this was a worrying performance. Nothing went right. Yes, you could say the referee didn't help out Juventus. There was questions about a potential penalty on Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm. There was questions that maybe Borja Valero, the Fiorentina player, should have been sent off. But you can't make those excuses. You simply cannot lose to this Fiorentina that was just above the relegation zone, that still hadn't won a game under their manager, and losing 3-0, it just simply was not good enough. Not the mark of a team that is favorites to win the Scudetto, that's for sure.
Well, as you mentioned, a team that hadn't won in 2 months coming into this time, Matteo. How much of a pass then do you give Pirlo? Remember they were 1-0 down before Cuadrado got sent off, in the fact that any side playing with 10 men are going to struggle?
Well, it felt like Pirlo was on the right direction by taking out one of the strikers, Morata, adding another midfield wide player in Federico Bernardeschi just to try to get a little bit more control of this game. But It's just really difficult to give any sort of excuse to Juventus with the quality of players they have. A team that, in my mind, before the season was the favorite yet again to win the Scudetto, their 10th straight. And Andrea Pirlo, there's glimmers that he's starting to get some things right, that he's starting to figure out what the identity is of this squad. For example, he's putting a third central midfielder. He realized that you can't just put in a video game formation with four attackers and not get overrun in the center of the park. So he's figuring things out. It's really hard to blame Pirlo just because he had never managed a game in his life before the start of the season. He had just gotten appointed under 23 manager. He didn't get even a minute with that team. And he was instantly given a team that had Cristiano Ronaldo, was expected to go all the way in Serie A, and of course challenge for the Champions League. So he's learning on the job. You can give him the benefit of the doubt that he's still trying to figure out exactly what the best Juve side is with all the new players that they've brought in. There's definitely still going to be some questions.
Meanwhile, of course, they lost the appeal earlier in the day as well. Just explain whether or not this was a surprise or not.
It felt like it had been coming. It was the National Olympic Committee that took a look at the ruling and found some holes from the original ruling, which came down really hard on Napoli, a minus 1 point deduction in the Serie A standings. Obviously, a 3-0 loss to Juventus in a game where Napoli said they weren't allowed to travel by the local government. And it was exactly that provision which allows them now to replay the match. I think for the neutrals, this is obviously a good thing. Juventus-Napoli should be one of the best games of the season, especially Napoli in the way that they have showed that they can play. But it's a massive blow for Juventus that, you know, saw Milan at the end of the barrel in Serie A, and now -3 here. Obviously, they can overturn that if they beat Napoli, easier said than done, and then losing the Fiorentina match. But there's been whispers in the Italian media that there would obviously be the appeal and that they would have to look at this again because it was a really harsh decision right away. Obviously, the idea from Serie A was that they didn't want to set the precedence for other teams saying, you know what, we've got 10 COVID cases, we don't want to travel. But then again, you can make the case saying, well, health is more important than sporting reasons. And they went and looked back and said that, yeah, the local government apparently said that Napoli couldn't travel. That's why they didn't make the trip to Turin. And so it is. Now we actually have Juventus-Napoli, a potentially excellent game in early 2021.
What significance does all of this have regarding the title race? Is it fair to say it's a four-horse race? Napoli, the two Milans, and Juve?
Yeah, it still is a four-horse race, Dan. I completely agree there. It's the two Milan sides. It is Juventus, even though they have taken this blow. It's such a long season. And Milan, who are currently top of the table, they have the youngest average squad in Serie A. They've had injuries. So I feel like everyone's almost thinking this is too good to be true. Are we really going to say that they're the favorites still in the second half of the season when it's such an inexperienced team, aside from Zlatan Ibrahimovic? Inter have no excuses, right? They have no Champions League football to play for. Antonio Conte has all of his eggs in the Serie A basket. And then Napoli now, they can say, right, we just basically gained 3 points. If we can beat Juventus, we have a much better chance than we did 12 hours ago to make a real stand and actually challenge and win the Scudetto, which they were, remember, for the last 10 years, they've been the kind of anti-Juve in Serie A, the one that was supposed to challenge for all these Italian titles.
Thank you very much, Matteo. The latest edition of the Serie Awesome podcast will drop on Thursday. A lot for Matteo, Kay, Nikki, and Mina to talk about.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
action in La Liga today saw Barcelona beat Valladolid by 3-0, but it's that third goal that is stealing all of the headlines because it was a record-breaking effort from Lionel Messi, which saw him score his 644th goal for Barcelona. That is now the most goals a player has achieved for a single club, eclipsing that of Pelé. Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop is with us. Shaka, I'm going to ask it. I'm going to do it. This makes him the greatest of all time, isn't it?
Does this have any kind of relation to the World Cup in any way, you know?
No, but no? What an achievement.
No, don't get me wrong. This is an incredible achievement, especially, you know, not just the raw numbers, but the way he did it and his performance today. But, you know, as I said many times before, I'll accept greatest club player of all time, but I still think he needs that final piece to his bow before I go any further.
Ali's—he was been nowhere near his best so far this season, but he was good today, wasn't he?
He was really good today, and I think Barcelona as a whole were really good, especially in the first half. But the level of activity of Lionel Messi and what he was doing with the ball and without the ball. More importantly, I thought that Lionel Messi wasn't only just roaming around the middle part of the field, just getting the balls from center backs and defensive midfielders and trying to play long balls. There was actually a sequence of play in which Pedri picks out a run of Lionel Messi in behind, mm-hmm. late in the first half. Actually, Messi trying to get in behind the back line. Beautiful ball from Pedri. Messi does make contact with the ball, but Masip comes up with the save. But it's just a little sign of the understanding between Pedri and Messi, and perhaps more importantly, the fact that there is a willingness for any player, but especially for Lionel Messi, to get in behind and to threaten that space. We don't see that enough from Barcelona. We saw it today, and we saw it from Messi himself.
Ali, let's just try and get our heads around the fact that this player has scored 644 goals for the same club. It is just such an extraordinary achievement that I don't think we're ever going to see matched, are we?
No, we're not. Given what we now know as the modern game, if you will. And I'm not even talking about the modern game on the field. I'm talking about the modern game off the field and how easily players move from club to club. It is rare to see any player stay within the same club for as long as Lionel Messi has or as long as Pelé did. It just doesn't happen. We're not going to see that sort of longevity, and we're not going to see that level of productivity with one club. We've seen it with Cristiano Ronaldo, but not with one club. Mm-hmm. And Lionel Messi has stayed in Barcelona, and let's not forget how close he was to leaving Barcelona in the summer. So this record might not have happened, even with Lionel Messi, had it not been for the famous bureau facts and what have you and all the other nonsense that went on in Barcelona this summer. We were very close to Messi not breaking this record, which then gives you an idea how unlikely it is that anybody, certainly in our lifetimes, is going to come through and somehow be able to get anywhere near this record. This is an amazing achievement, and I don't think people really understand how much of an achievement this is. If you take it all in and you consider all the variables in the game, on and off the field, that he's been as consistent as he has been for one call and being able to score the amount of goals that he has, it's absolutely outstanding. It's absolutely incredible.
Do you think we'll ever see this record beaten, Shaq?
Absolutely not. Yeah. And Ali, for all the reasons that Ali just highlighted, I think in today's game, because of some of the personalities, we take a few things for granted. That a player like Lionel Messi can be as impactful as he was as a teenager coming off the bench for Barcelona. But then you see Ronaldo do similarly early on, and then with United, you see Kylian Mbappe do that, and you kind of think that that's the norm. Or you kind of think that it's the norm to be well into your 30s and producing the kind of performances that Messi, Ronaldo, and Zlatan do. And it is not. We are just in this odd time where we have these special personalities, these outstanding talents that maybe have raised the bar. I don't think we'll see that again anytime soon, not at both ends of somebody's playing career.
That big individual achievement. Elsewhere, though, when it comes to teams in La Liga, A huge statement from Atleti today, going away against Real Sociedad, who, of course, been excellent this season, and winning by 2-0. Typical Atleti fashion, just 3 shots on target between both teams. 2 of them going in for Simeone's side. That puts them 3 points clear at the top of the table. Real Madrid in action tomorrow. Ali, you feel if Atleti are going to win the title, this is how they're going to do it, isn't it?
It is, but I disagree slightly when you said Atleti in a typical Atletico Madrid fashion. I think today, though they scored the first goal of a set piece, which is typical for Atletico Madrid, there were moments in which they could have just sat back and absorbed pressure from Real Sociedad, and they did have some issues in dealing with David Silva, and they did have some issues with Espíritu Porto down the right-hand side. But we did see Atletico Madrid willing to play and actually continue to attack. Not creating much, but still continue to attack. And Yannick Ferreira Carrasco was always active down the left-hand side. Suarez, who seems to me like he's carrying a little bit of weight and doesn't seem in the best shape. However, he does make a difference in the second goal because he picks out a run and understands where to move, holds up the defender, lays the ball back, and then of a deflection, then the ball gets to Marco Llorente, who then finishes the game off. But there was a willingness from Atletico Madrid to at the very least go on attack and be a threat on the attacking half so that then Real Sociedad wasn't just parked and just create opportunity after opportunity against Atletico Madrid. It wasn't so much of that Atletico Madrid today. What we saw is you got a 2-0 win. It was a mature performance, and once that, as you just said, they're going to need some of this if indeed they're going to go on to win this title.
Shaka, when we chatted about it on Sunday, you said Atleti, for you, were still favourites to go on and win the title. Did today's results solidify your opinion?
It does, in a sense. Well, certainly the result certainly goes a long way against a very good Sociedad team, and this is a old cliche of a 6-pointer at the top of the table. For me, I thought Atleti started really well. And at times, it felt like Sociedad couldn't even get out of their own box. And then, probably about 15 minutes in, it went back to the usual Diego Simeone kind of, we'll just make sure and keep 10 men behind the ball and just leave Luis Suarez up, who at times really does feel like a passenger for Atletico Madrid. But and you see that defensive side to them. When I think, especially when you look at the personalities on the field, they can be so much more. And that's what you saw in the first 15. But then you saw the Diego Simeone come out in the end. Ultimately, I feel that they defensively, they cope with everything, maybe outside of Real Madrid and maybe Barca if Messi continues in this form in La Liga. And they certainly have enough talent to continue to beat everybody else. I think they've got enough to go on and win it while the others struggle with their own consistencies.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, if you ever miss the show, you can always, maybe if you're driving around somewhere or something like that, you can download the daily podcast, which is available over on the website. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So just a reminder of Wednesday's matches in the Carabao Cup. You got Stoke City against Tottenham and Everton taking on Manchester United. Ahead of that clash, ESPN FC's Rob Dawson sat down and spoke to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about the potential of going all the way in this competition.
It's always an important step for any team and any player to win a trophy. That's something we're aiming for. We've got to make changes, of course. We've got to freshen it up. But the team will be a fresh one, which I think can give Everton some problems, yeah.
I don't know if you saw at the weekend that Marcus Rashford did an interview and he said that he felt that this group in particular was so close to winning trophies after getting to three semi-finals last season. Is that a feeling that this group gives you as well, that they are just maybe one step away from winning things?
Well, we certainly were one step away from a final last season, and we did. We finished the season really strongly in the league as well. So, of course, we were disappointed that we didn't get to a final or lift the trophy. But then again, that's the next step for these now. I think everyone felt how close we were, and the mood and the spirit and the culture has improved since then. So, and the belief, definitely the belief has grown, because we know that we've got players. So say Marcus, then Anthony, Mason, they've not really kicked or really, really been on fire this season. And when we get them scoring more goals, I'm sure we'll look at more of a threat.
If they win it, does this shut you up?
What, the Carabao Cup?
Yeah, is that enough?
What, the competition that Liverpool won and Kenny Dalglish was sacked the same season? Look, there's bigger prizes for Man United out there. Obviously, FA Cup, Europa League. I was going to say top four, but competing in the title race, because that's where they are at the moment. But, you know, it's important to be winning trophies, but when you think about Spurs that are in there, who walloped him 6-1, and City are still in there, so it's a big if. But he has got, you know, what he does have is the ability to rotate and some young talent aligned to the likes of Bruno Fernandes, who's an absolute clear game changer. So they have the ability to do so, and it's just whether he can guide them over the line. He said he's going to make changes, and generally that's what this competition comes down to, is who makes the most changes, who rotates the most, and who takes it the most serious.
Craig mentioned Spurs there, Stevie. Who needs this more, Spurs or United?
I think United. I think Ollie does. You know, Man United is a club that's about winning silverware. Tottenham is not a club that's built on winning silverware. You know, the fact that Mourinho can get them close to, whether it's the FA Cup, the Carabao Cup, any sort of trophy at all, makes them feel good. Man United, we all expect, and they should expect, to win trophies. And winning trophies, 100%, regardless of how young or how old you are, lifts you, makes you believe in what you're doing even more. So, listen, I think for Man United to take the next step, they have to win a trophy. Why not start, albeit with the Carabao Cup?
Please somebody tell me that Stevie's been assigned to watch the Stoke City v Tottenham game tomorrow.
It's just a lover of the game. Why? He'll be watching it.
Hey, I watched Brentford Newcastle there, so that would be a
that would who needs it more, do you agree? United need it more than Spurs?
Yeah.
Spurs were just in a Champions League final, weren't they?
Yeah, but he just needs to get some under his belt to get people like me and others off his back for a little bit. And then, you know, at the end of the day, that's a club traditionally that are just, you know, almost every season they've won something. And it's generally been they're in the European, they're in the Champions League final, they're winning the leagues, they're winning the FA Cups, and they're trying to get back to that. So it's a small stepping stone for him, or it's a small stepping stone for that club, but it'll be a big one for him.
You can see all 9 minutes of Ollie's interview with Rob Dawson over on our YouTube channel.
I'll watch that later.
Be sure to check it out. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. We'll be back tomorrow.
Talking about Arsenal tomorrow, I believe. No, are you? I don't know. I'm off.
Are you off?
Yeah.
Oh, on a moment. Yeah. Manchester United, they'll win tomorrow, and then people say, oh, Craig's off because he's avoiding.
Well, I'll feel loser will come in. If they win, I'm staying off.
Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Craig and Stevie answering your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Stevie and Craig with us today. We've sifted through the angry, abusive tweets.
Don't tell me.
Well, there's been none left then.
Yeah, exactly. So this is
angry, abusive.
This is the seventh that are left.
See you tomorrow.
Would that be Man United at all?
Craig, if given a choice, where would you rather work? Manchester United TV, Liverpool TV, or Spurs TV?
Good question, huh? Where would I rather work? Man United TV, Liverpool TV.
Yeah, we treat your ticket seriously.
Well, I, as I'm a very popular with Man United fans, I would say Man United TV.
Stevie, would you be okay working for Liverpool TV? Because obviously you support them, but you find it difficult not to be critical, wouldn't you?
Yes. Yeah, and I've been on Liverpool TV a couple of times.
Ooh.
And they've never actually asked me a question about anything other than fun stuff.
Right, okay.
About years gone by. Never ask any questions about how the team's doing or can they do this better. Nothing like that. I mean, you got to be vanilla. I mean,
you do that well,
the nature
you?
Of the beast.
So the guys on Liverpool TV, I know all these TV channels, I know guys at... Tommy Langley at Chelsea TV years ago, when Andre Villas-Boas was manager, was taken off.
Right.
Taken off, because Tommy had
Roy Keane obviously mentioned United TV as well, famously.
Well, he didn't work for them, he gave an interview to them.
And they did the show.
But Tommy was working at Chelsea TV and his opinion was a strong one, I believe, and Villas-Boas had him taken off. Now, when Villas-Boas left, the plum, he was reinstated, Tommy. But for example, Liverpool TV, I think they might be wrong. Gary Gillespie and a few people like that. They're all good guys.
Aldridge.
John Aldridge.
Yeah.
They're all good guys. Don Hutchinson. They're all... but they have to play it.
Yeah. That's where our colleague Stuart Robson let himself down at Arsenal TV, wasn't it?
Can you imagine?
He got kicked off of there for his criticism of Arsenal.
Can you imagine?
Dan, we had their own production team at the Revs. And we had the guy who used to do the games at the Revs, and I was the head coach. And this guy believed that he should be given his opinion regardless of whether it was good or bad on the Revs.
Right.
But it was an absolute nightmare. You know, your own TV company, and lads are coming in the day after the game going, hold on a second, why is our guys giving us pelters and giving us stick? Because that's what they were doing.
So you couldn't take the criticism?
So when somebody... that makes my job twice as hard. I've got players coming in saying, hold on a second, these guys on our TV are saying I'm this and I'm that and I'm doing this wrong and doing that wrong. So then I've got to go and see Brad and talk about the guy who's the colour guy and say, hey, hold on a second, why are we criticising our players? So I've seen both sides.
Were you ever on a team that was massively underperforming, similar to Arsenal? If so, what was the atmosphere in the dressing room like, and was your team able to turn its form around?
Massively underperforming? I would say no. Chelsea at the time wasn't massively underperforming. Yeah. We were...
Derby, I suppose, expectations were...
Derby overperformed, trust me. The fact that we stayed in the Premier League with what we had for a couple of years under Jim was an amazing...
Pat on the back. Pat on the back for Craig there, Stevie, for keeping them up.
I said it's team.
Oh, team, sorry.
Well, it was a couple of... And in Celtic, we had a good side.
Right.
So, no, I when LeBeuf...
What about that second season of Celtic when it all went crazy with John Barnes in charge? Was that third season?
Yeah.
No, that must have been...
It was a total
weird.
Mess by then. It wasn't all John's fault. It was, like, politics, but it was a total mess by then. But I wouldn't say we... I mean, Don's team... Was that? Did you mention that West Ham? They underperformed, didn't they?
Right.
Team
yes. That were relegated. Yeah, we talked about them yesterday.
Team that were relegated with Hutchinson and Di Canio and was Shaka in that?
No.
Well, he was probably sleeping. He was probably sleeping.
He always tells us he's never been relegated.
Has he? He's been relegated from this show.
Stevie.
To his house.
Well, I'd have to say yes. And what? 92, 93. As soon as came and then left, and a lot of things changed, and certainly in the personnel, and we massively underperformed. And I mean, I'm going to assume that every dressing room that's struggling is the same. The two things that stand out are, one, nobody taking any responsibility, and two, the ones that don't take responsibility are trying to point the finger at others.
Right.
That's the two things I'll guarantee in any team that's underperforming that happens.
Will you point the finger at anyone, Stevie?
Oh, I was too busy trying to work out what I was doing wrong at the time, to be honest.
Oh.
I wasn't at my best.
Oh, Stephen. Willian revealed, while signing for Arsenal, that Arteta has promised him a Champions League win in 3 years. What is the most ambitious or borderline ridiculous promise a manager made you to, while signing for a new club or a new contract, an existing club? Right,
Willian revealed, while signing for Arsenal, Arteta promised him a UEFA Champions League in 3 years.
Apparently.
And Willian promised Arteta he was going to play poorly every time he pulled an Arsenal shirt on.
Yep.
Well, I must admit, Stevie, I mean, they said that to you or me, we'd have bust out laughing.
Yes, I imagine so.
They've never won the Champions League in their history.
Did you have any managers that would make ridiculous promises to you?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, your Scottish manager at the World Cup. And who was Ronaldo, or who was a poor man's?
Oh, like Brownie.
But he knew. Yeah, we knew they were talking nonsense.
Didier
Deschamps. A big Deschamps. Laughed in his face.
Didier Deschamps was a poor man's Stuart McCall.
Brilliant.
And Stuart was a good player, by the way. A really good player. But he just came out with these lines. But he didn't promise anything. No, he didn't promise.
Steve, have you ever any promise? Or when people signed for the Reds, did you promise them?
Well, two things. The Scotland one, when I was there, Andy Roxburgh threw out about Eric Cantona. He said, it's a poor man's Joe Jordan. So I went, what? And then the other one was Howard Kendall. Howard Kendall persuaded me to go to Notts County as a player assistant. And he said to me on the phone, he says, we're getting relegated, you know that already, but you know what? We've got a good team and we'll just bring them up next year, get back in the first division and we'll look great. I was like, right, I'm in. 3 months later, Howard got the sack. I took over as interim thinking I was getting the job. And then 2 months after that, I was back as a player in the old third division.
Wow.
That was a rather interesting 6 months, I can assure you.
Goodness me, Stevie, yeah. Did Craig realise Manchester United have won the last 6 out of 7 in the Premier League? We're making his points about who can string a 7-9 game winning streak to contend for the title, and didn't consider that Manchester United can. Which was yesterday, wasn't it? You were saying that City are the biggest rivals to Liverpool.
Yep. Not changed my mind.
No? It's a big surprise.
Not changed my mind on that.
Stevie, who have you got as the biggest contenders for the title?
The biggest contenders what?
For the title. Who are you most worried about?
For the
about?
Title?
Yeah.
Liverpool, City, Chelsea, I think Man United have kind of shown that they can possibly be there. I don't think Leicester will last.
I think he was trying to say is who's potentially the biggest threat to Liverpool out of all that lot?
Well, I said City, Chelsea, United. That's probably the three.
Stevie, did Arsenal mess up by not hiring Big Sam while he was available?
Well, actually, you can't say that because what Arteta did was he battened down the hatches. Didn't play particularly nice open attack football and got results. So actually, Arteta did what people think Sam does when he goes to a club.
Craig, will there be a title race in the Premier League this season, or is this Liverpool team too good at the moment? You were shouting at Don yesterday, weren't you, when he was suggesting maybe...
No, look, I think people get carried away that you know, Liverpool have still got a fair amount of injuries. They had a great result at the weekend. Fantastic, ruthless in their finishing, but it was only like a week or so ago, they actually get outplayed for long periods at Fulham. So they're not. None of these teams are like what City and Liverpool have been the previous 2 years, where they've just cantered away from everybody with 98 and 99 points, the two of them or whatever it is. I don't think any of them are in that kind of form. So would it surprise me if Liverpool were to go away from home and drop points? No, it wouldn't. Right. So I don't think it's done and dusted. Don was trying to say yesterday. I mean, if City were... So this Premier League at the moment is all ifs and buts, even with the big guys. They're 8 points behind, a game in hand takes them to five, and there's 24 matches left.
Right.
Right. And Don's anointing the season over almost. It's a bit much.
Final question. It's going to be a big sigh from Stevie. What was your favourite present you got from Santa ever, Stevie? Is Christmas just as good as a father than as a child? God, we're going deep. Did you let the kids open the presents in the morning before you went to training, or make them wait until after you got back? Right. Want to unpack there, Stevie?
Well, the best present I ever got was a football.
Yep.
Absolutely. It was the only thing I ever wanted anyway, so I always got what I wanted. No, the kids, we got up early. Are you having a clue? Are you having a laugh? If you've got kids, you know you're up early. So, absolutely. They were up presents before we went to training in the morning.
Craig?
What's the question?
Well, there's lots of it.
I would say...
What's the favourite present?
Oh, I don't have a... You know, the best time is your kids' age.
Yeah.
I've got three, but they're all between 17 and 25. And Christmas is kind of gone for them. But when they're all young...
Yes.
That's the best time for me.
Nice.
And then my wife's...
What role did you play in the present?
The dad. Buying,
the wrapping... Anything?
I oversaw the laying out of the presents.
Did you say I'm the dad?
Yes. You said what role did I play? I'd like to think I'm the dad, yes. There's a little certain look like there. I would, no. My mum and dad used to, because we always lived away in England, so the parents and parents-in-law used to come down. But Cheryl's dad, because her mum passed away a long time ago, her dad used to come down and film every Christmas for the kids. He loved doing that, Alec. He'd come down, put his little tripod up, and he'd film the kids coming in. And that's the kind of thing that we still have.
Cool.
But it's funny to look back. These kids are so spoiled, it's unbelievable. I've never seen so many presents.
Yeah,
I bet you're going to be the same.
That continues, most definitely, yeah. Now they'll be back on their iPads.
My 22-year-old's still like that, you know. He's 6'4", as you know.
Yes, yeah.
Built like a brick.
But he's excited still.
And he'll come, if he's only got two or three presents, he's going to go in the huff. I'm telling you. He's like a big kid still.
What was your favourite present, though, when you were younger?
Oh, I used to love a bike.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. Nice.
Can't beat a good bike, can you?
You've been on a bike for ages, though. Your wife goes on a bike mainly to escape you.
No, I'm talking about when I was 7 or 8 years old.
I know, but I'm saying now.
And they used to hide it at my at family and friends' houses, so you didn't know.
Right.
You'd ask for it.
Look, there's still a glint of excitement in your eyes, Craig.
Don't you put a Christmas list down and you say, I don't know if I'm getting it.
Yeah.
I want a bike and I want this, but I don't know if I'm getting it.
I'll tell you what, the only chance we had of getting a bike was we robbed it.
All right, Stevie.
I found the parts nice and got somebody there to put it together.
Did you were dragging us through your poverty.
Right. Can I have a bike? Yeah, right. Don't be so stupid. Yeah. There's your ball.
If you go and nick the one from next door.
Yeah, exactly, go and thieve it. Yeah. Lovely.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ruining a moment.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Oh, that's
bike.
It.
All
right.
Gone now.
He's laughing at your bike still.
A bike? What's wrong with that?
Your posh ways.
I tell you what.
Are you posh? You must have been one of these snobby people.
I'm from Cumnock. Of course I'm posh. Oh, excuse me, Mum and Dad. Can I have a car for Christmas?
Oh, sure.
No, you're getting a bike.
Oh, I tell you what. Yeah. Stevie and his ball.
Yeah, you got a ball. It wasn't even a new one.
I got a ball. And somebody else's name on it.
Someone had kicked it over the fence right there.
Right, that'll do.
For Stevie.
Put Stevie's name on it.
That is it. We'll be back tomorrow. More nostalgia around the holidays, I'm sure. Be sure to join us.